You're listening to the Darius Daniels Podcast.
Well, what's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Darius Daniels Podcast. I'm Darius Daniels, and I'm excited about today's show. Listen, I think each week we get better and better, and I believe today is no exception. We're going to have some conversations for the culture. We're going to have some conversations for your transformation. Listen, today we're going to be giving you keys and tips to help you overcome the arch enemy of your own evolution. What's that? That's criticism. I can't wait for you to be strengthened, for you to be encouraged, and for you to be edutained on this episode of the Darius Daniels Podcast. Well, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Chastity Dakari in the building. How y'all doing today?
What's up? Hey, you were just telling us about your previous thug life that you used to live.
Yeah, you did say you talked about you
so
having a
lot of
tattoos.
We're going to come on the show and talk about that.
But first, you did ask a question.
Y'all not ready for this gangster.
Let's talk about I'm what doing amazing. Going, thank you so much. Yeah.
Y'all not ready for this gangster.
Yeah, let's talk
kill
about
Michael,
you and these
kill Michael, Mississippi.
Yeah, because he said he had thug life. Like
yeah,
Tupac, right?
On his chest. Yeah, he did.
Listen, there were no tattoo shops in my town. You couldn't even get
y'all
tattoos.
Y'all didn't have tattoo shops?
No, there's no tattoo shops in Kilmichael, Mississippi.
Henna, though.
Henna?
Not close to the water. Right?
No, it's no henna. Listen, you know you can't even rob. Time? Like, everybody knows everybody. So if you try to rob somebody, they know your mama.
Mm. Wow.
They're like, who's it? Darius. Boy, if you don't move, I'm getting ready to call your mom.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know it was that small.
It's super small. 630 people.
So how many people graduated in your class?
33.
Like your high school?
Yes. My high school graduating class was
33. So you know everybody. To be valedictorian, wasn't it?
Hey.
I got you. I got this. I just got to be 32 people for 4 years. I can get them.
Listen, probably got all the superlatives. Did y'all have superlatives?
Like, superlatives.
You know, like best dressed.
Yeah, class
most
clown.
Attractive.
Most athletic.
Yes. Like the most likely to succeed.
Yeah, that was probably you, right?
I can't remember, honestly.
Oh.
I can't remember.
How did y'all
I was class president,
class?
But that's
his
all
was probably
I remember.
Most likely to live a thug life.
No, I'm thinking about his yearbook.
This
the
gangster's
pictures.
Real.
Did y'all
have
yearbooks?
Yes, we had yearbooks.
So y'all was like half a page. Y'all were like an ad, like in a church bulletin. Like, this graduating class, half a page.
If anybody from Montgomery County High School is listening to this podcast, this is Dakari who's throwing shade.
No, I think
at
it's great.
School.
Did everybody graduate, though? You said it was 33, like in your class.
Hey,
everybody.
This is the thing, though. When the class is that small, if somebody doesn't make it,
everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
The car is so tickled.
Bro, Mike, it's so true. Though.
It's not a good look.
Hey, you know, Johnny, ain't walking with a snake.
Y'all leave my city alone.
Oh, my
shout
God.
Shout out to Kim
I
Michael.
Know, but you know somebody absent. Like, you're like, one, two. Oh, we got 30 today, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Y'all, we got a show to do. We got a show to do.
Hey, we get the yearbook? Anybody out here got the yearbook? I got the yearbook.
No.
We got to show the class.
I don't even know if I got to ask my dad because he keeps
God.
Some of the stuff. I know I don't have the yearbook, but you're right. It had to be small.
Yeah, I really wasn't.
It was under 100 people in the high school, though.
Wow.
It was under 100 people in the entire high school.
I think I had like 400 and some people graduating in my class, my high school.
So. Yo, we started our class, I think it was, we started about 600 kids, and
really?
It ended up being like half of that at graduation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super. Hey, it's what it is. Small towns, gas station food.
Mm.
Yeah, you like that? I didn't have any, but I was in Louisiana this past week, and man, some of the best food.
Did you dine and dash? Did you try it?
No,
did you try
I did
it?
Not.
Oh,
That's the only place to die in there.
Well, how are you living a thug life and not?
Wait a minute. She keeps trying to impose my old ways on me.
No. Yeah. Not.
Old things I've passed away.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey.
You got it? Come on, elder.
You delivered.
Delivered. You delivered.
I was actually, there's no thugging in my history at all.
So did you eat the gas station food?
I didn't, man, but a couple of my friends did who were in town. We were speaking at this same thing. So they had something called boudin balls. You heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Never mind.
That's like some New Orleans. I know in New Orleans.
Boudin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you just got to Google it.
No, I've had them before in New Orleans.
You had them?
Yeah, New Orleans.
It's a type of food?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a concoction of a number of different things.
It's weird. But I'm not going to call y'all ain't finna get on me, man, about Louisiana.
They about to cancel the car.
It was a weird dish.
It just has a lot of multiple different
popular.
Things inside
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, it's like, it's super, super popular.
Is it soup-based, rice?
It's
like
pork.
I'm trying to understand. Oh, yeah. Nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you never ate a sausage biscuit from the gas station?
Well, no, I haven't. Pizza. Yeah, you know, back in the day, they had really good chicken tenders. And like this gas station in Nashville.
Please tell me y'all are stealing from the gas station.
No. Let me make sure. Oh, no, I didn't. The car answered. Are you criticizing us?
No, I'm not. Listen, we're going to be talking about criticism a little later, but that was not a criticism. I mean, listen, I'm all for it. I love my time in Louisiana. Like, the people are great.
Mm-hmm.
The place I go and speak is great. The leader I speak for, one of my favorite people in the entire world. I was just coming back today, though, mm-hmm. and I'm on the plane, and I'm just sitting thinking, like, I don't know how many more of these I have in me.
Yeah.
Like, not going to Louisiana, I'm not anti that. But, I mean, you guys know that was a day when I was just traveling and speaking so mm-hmm. much. And I think, not trying to over-spiritualize it, but the grace on me for that is lifted a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I hadn't had any, like, burning bush experiences, anything like that. But I believe God works through your wants sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that he doesn't just give you desires of your heart. He gives you desires for your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And when that desire and passion to do a thing like that leaves, it's time to pivot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm thinking. I'm not sure what that looks like. I just know, I know what I felt. And you just made a pivot, Chastity, not too long ago.
Yeah.
That's why we're hiring. We need some help because mm-hmm. there's something she just said she don't want to do anymore.
She's done with it.
Yeah,
I'm done.
I'm done. I'm going to use his words. It's not the highest and best usage of my time.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use that going forward.
Yeah. There's so much more in me. So it takes a lot of my time.
I'm going to try that on my next
But no,
Zoom
you
call.
Just felt like, I mean, you're doing a great job at it, but you just felt like, yo, I'm not into this anymore.
No, not at all.
And you know what? That's. I'm glad you brought that up. For people that may be listening, how do you approach your supervisor in a workspace
where
that can be healthy,
me that question.
Right? No, I mean, both end though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just say, hey, I'm not sure if I can do this anymore without them saying, well, you may not need to be in this organization.
I don't know because I'm thinking through that. I think in different spaces, you got different kinds of latitude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like sometimes you in what's called a tent making season, like Paul, you got to do what you got to do until you can do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I feel like it kind of depends a lot on the, you know, on the relationship with the supervisor and all of that. Yo, I don't want to shift the subject to like a somber place, shift the conversation to a somber place, but I feel like we gotta at least acknowledge and address like the sad, horrendous, horrific shooting.
Yeah, this happened while you were
recently.
Gone.
Yeah.
In Atlanta, Georgia, man. It's just
awful.
My heart just sinks. Something happens.
Yeah. My heart sinks, and my heart also goes out to all of the families that were involved. We don't know the motive. So I know there are, I don't want to use this word and then people email us, but people are, I think, like kind of speculating until they talk to the guy who actually did the crime or whatever. But for me, like as a woman to hear that and it happened, like, what did it happen? Like a massage place or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of hard to hear because I'm sure those women were just working like they normally do. And I don't know if the guy just came in there and he just open fire on everyone or if it was something that led to it. But either way, there's not an excuse for it.
So. Yeah. And as I was saying to you all earlier, what bothered me the most was the sheriff as he was making his statement when he said, you know, the guy just had a bad day. Mm-hmm. And as I was saying, no, Trayvon Martin had a bad day.
Absolutely.
George Floyd had a bad day. There were others that really had a bad day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This guy was very intentional.
Yeah.
In his actions. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, in terms of motive, we don't know. But his actions, that wasn't a bad day. That was a bad guy, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that I think is important and that we all can learn from with something like this is like with any kind of act, let's say even if it's a racist act, like I think the assumption is, it's got to be intentional and conscious mm-hmm. for it to be racist or racially motivated.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called unconscious bias. So you can be unconscious and unaware of your bias, and you don't have to be intentionally racial to commit a racist act. And so, you know, I'm not saying that that's the case with here. It's just, you know, definitely highly coincidental that.
Mm-hmm.
I think almost everybody whose life was lost was of a certain race.
Yeah.
And it's just something, man. It's sad. We just got to, I don't know, keep. Those are like families. That's people's moms and sisters and daughters and
families,
all of that.
Yep.
So friends we really gotta, and stuff. And it's like their lives are cut short.
Yeah.
That's what I think about. It's like, what would possess you to do something like that? Like.
Yeah, man. It's tough.
It is tough.
We're going to keep.
And see, that's another thing. I mean, to even bring up, I'm sure you guys have heard about what's been going on in the news now with the certain gospel singer, worship leader, and his son. And it's like you never know the motive behind what people are doing, and that goes into like what we're talking about today, like us criticizing. And there has been so much criticism in the media from fans and people from all around the world criticizing his son. For putting the family business out there.
Yeah. You know?
This is what I think. I think everybody has a right to have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't feel like you always got a right to share it.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I feel like with this Kirk situation, people can have opinions about whatever. But I do feel like, I don't know, this is me personally. I feel like that's kind of a family matter.
Absolutely.
And regardless of what your opinions are, one side or another, we don't have full context on all the dynamics that were going on. And so, I thought it was admirable for him to apologize and things of that particular nature, I guess. But I felt like you don't owe me an explanation about, that's mm-mm. like none of my business
nope.
in terms of what's going on with you and your family. I just mm-hmm. hope, you know, y'all are able to straighten it out some kind of way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was weird. I mean, when you live in a space where you hadn't had the best relationship, I'm talking about me personally,
yeah.
with my father, it's always interesting to see these different dynamics at work. I would have never shared a conversation. I would have never recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
If I did, maybe it would have been to share it with my mom or say, hey, look, this is what, you know, my father shared with mm-hmm. me. But I don't think I would have posted it for the world to see. But again, that's some type of pain there.
I definitely
Chastity,
feel
you
like
talking about that. That, you know, unresolved pain can lead to so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is they're having to live that out publicly.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
And we can say it's unfortunate and it's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Like, whenever you achieve any, like, degree of success in any area, well, I think it's life principle, period. But any type of success in any area, you've got to be prepared for, like, when you have a unique accomplishment, you're going to get unique criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like learning how to deal with that in a healthy way is like a life skill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if, I don't feel like people talk about it a lot, but we're getting ready to have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Because no matter what you do, what lane you're in, you better be prepared for criticism. Like, I don't know what, last week, I did an interview with Yvonne,
mm-hmm.
and she dealt with like criticism even from parents when it came to
making
mm-hmm.
making a decision.
Career decisions and things of that particular nature. Mm-hmm. So this is it's a life skill, and it's a life skill I feel like everybody needs to learn. We're going to have a conversation about that coming up next right here on the Darius Daniels Podcast. video. I had my legs crossed with the bishop with the bishop cross, and I thought about.
Oh, you did it when you were speaking.
No, I just had it right here, right now, and I was. I took it off. I don't know. Don't criticize me.
Did you have your legs like that when they were announcing you?
No. When I was getting ready to speak last week. No, absolutely not.
You was in your bishop pose?
No.
Ready to go?
Read the bio?
No. It's not. thankfully, they did not read this bio this week. That is weird. But, yo, I think it's important, man, for us to have this conversation surrounding this subject of criticism and to really give people some tools and some tips on how to manage it in a healthy way, because I think everybody has to manage it, but every way that it's managed is not necessarily helpful and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really, really think it's important. I think when you don't manage it in a healthy way, it affects you two ways. One, it becomes a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And so as opposed to fully leaning into the goals you're trying to accomplish and the progress you're trying to make, you find yourself trying to respond to, answer, or prove you're the opposite of that criticism.
Yeah.
So true.
Sometimes you're trying to prove something to people who have made a decision not to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They've already made a decision.
Yeah.
They've got an opinion. They've made a decision not to believe you. So it affects you in that way, distraction. Then I think it can affect you developmentally. Like it can do something to a person's soul and their heart and things of that particular nature. So I'm really excited about this conversation.
Yeah. Have you ever been criticized by anyone and it like distracted you? Or
do I get criticized by anyone all the time?
Not like people you don't know. I'm talking about like people that you do know. Like,
yeah, I think so. I think it comes from people I don't know more.
Yeah.
Like in the digital world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think it's more distracting or more, sometimes more damaging when it comes from people you do know and you feel like you thought knew you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's funny. You said, I thought you were going to say from others is more damaging, because I feel like those individuals that don't know you can create more stories about you in certain spaces. Whereas people that you know, they won't go as far as people that don't know you. It's almost like when we were talking, I think before we started, we were talking about celebrities and, you know, what it costs. I look at so many different celebrities that have been in situations, and people who have opinions of them have spread it so much about them that it's still a thing, that something that may never have happened 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody like, you remember when they did this?
Mm.
And I'm thinking it would be more damaging for others.
Yeah.
But you're saying the total opposite.
Well, I feel like sometimes it could be more damaging. So when I say damage, I'm talking about the damage that it does, like, to me, to a person.
Okay.
Like some rumors or whatever may be more damaging to a person's brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that can come from people you don't know or people you do know. But I'm saying, like, in terms of like personal hurt, I think that for me, it stings a little more.
I see.
When it comes to not just from people I know, but people I thought knew me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's because I think everybody, I mean, you know what I mean? I think you feel like you want to be known the best by the people that are around you the most.
Mm-hmm.
You do.
And when you feel like people are missing that, then it could be...
It's like, you don't even know me. Like,
it could be a little damaging.
Yeah.
I think just thinking about growing up, it's always been hard to accept criticism from others.
Mm-hmm.
Have you experienced that? Like for me, it was always harder.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. I think everybody learns coping mechanisms with criticism. So it's hard. So because it's hard, you learn to cope. The question is the way you're learning to cope healthy?
Yeah.
And what I found is very rarely do people get coaching on how to cope with criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of the time it's like, yo, just be dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
Just, oh man, forget them. You know, they crazy. No. Just whatever. Just keep it moving.
And that's not healthy.
And, you know, I do think if you just kind of adopt that attitude, then you close yourself off to counsel that you're going to need probably at some point. from people that can stop you from making bad decisions or help you correct something that needs to be corrected. So, you know, I don't feel like you need to give everybody access to your ear and the opportunity to speak into your life. Yet at the same time, I don't think just adopting this callous attitude where you're just dismissive of everything and everybody is something that's also going to be helpful for the long term.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's helpful at all. Let me ask you this. When you experience like criticism from other people, like, so you talk about like having these healthy coping mechanisms. What are some things that you have implemented into your own life so it doesn't necessarily damage you as much or distract you from your goals and your purpose and things like that?
Yeah. So this is what I've done. I talked about this before. I feel like everybody needs what I call a pain plan.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm.
So instead of just trying to get to a place where certain things don't hurt, for me, my strategy is to put a plan in place to properly process the hurt mm-hmm. when I deal with it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a part of my daily regimen.
Yeah.
I do some what Rich Velotis calls some interior examination. Mm-hmm. And so me and you were talking about this not too long ago where there are four questions I'm asking myself mm-hmm. every morning.
This is good. Come on.
And it's one, it's...
You get your pen and paper yeah, in the I'm car. Sitting
up, listen.
Go across your legs. This is... Go ahead.
Go give me these four. It's one, all right, hey, what are you mad about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Two, what are you sad about? Mm-hmm. Three, what are you anxious/nervous about? Mm. And then four, what are you glad about? Mm-hmm. So that's something that I'm going to try to do every morning during my quiet time. Mm-hmm. And it kind of helps me process the pain, yeah. if that makes sense. So I feel like that's part of it. But then there also, you want some more questions?
Yeah, let's go. also,
that's kind of like regular maintenance. But then if it feels like, if I feel like something's happened and I've been wounded a bit, mm-hmm. then there's another set of questions I'm going to ask. And this is also, I also got this from Rich Velotis, and it's this. It's, all right, what happened? What just happened? Okay? What did it make me feel? Now, what story am I telling myself?
That's so big, that last one.
Yeah.
What story am I telling myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What story am I telling myself? What does the gospel have to say about this?
Yeah.
And what counterintuitive action do I need to take?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So if I'm criticized and my intuitive action is to lash back, that last question helps you say, okay, now what counterintuitive action do I need to take? If I would normally stuff it, do I need to sit here and process it for a minute? So to me, those questions, those discerning questions, that interior examination kind of helps me process the pain. Mm-hmm. And I think over time, stuff starts hurting less. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, I think because I'm human, it still hurts from time to time. Absolutely. And so I just process that pain that way.
So here's the thing. I think we dive straight into criticism that we didn't actually discuss the different types of criticism.
Yeah.
So I think one that we're talking about right now is the criticism that we receive from people and we think it's negative. But then there's also the flip side of criticism that is like the constructive criticism that someone, it's always not like what culture says is hate. You know what I mean? Or someone giving their opinion. It's like, no, I see something where you can be better at and I want to constructively give you this advice.
Yeah.
But don't take it as if I'm being negative. It's just that I see something that can be corrected.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, I think this is good. I think the language we use in doing constructive criticism is ultimately what kind of creates this place where people say you're hating. Mm-hmm. I think we have to be careful on how we say things.
And also how we receive things as well, though.
But I think even in receiving, though, it goes back to that pain piece.
Absolutely.
If there's something you don't know, there's some unresolved pain there, mm-hmm. and you critique me from a place that you don't understand that pain threshold, mm-hmm. I'm going to naturally feel defensive. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that's why, like with language, like I get the receiving part, but language, when I was in divinity school, I took this class on death and dying. And it was one of the most fascinating classes I've had because
Me too. Who taught that?
I took it at the educational building. So okay. It was like, it wasn't.
I took a class like that too.
But it was so good because they told us, they gave us a list of things not to say when a person transitions.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm thinking there are words and phrases that you should say when you're saying, hey, you could have said this better. Mm-hmm. I think there's different words that you potentially can use to help people. I think sometimes when we say it, we're saying, well, I was just giving them the truth.
Yeah.
And it's like, yo, you just crushed me though.
Yeah.
You know, like, how
I
do you...
I get it.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. However, I just... What about the people who don't necessarily know what that person may have experienced? What's in their heart? The trauma they've dealt with? Like, even if they're close to them or they're not close to them. I agree with you. Definitely be mindful of your language. But then also, as a person, like, if you're not emotionally strong to, like, kind of deal with some of that criticism that people give you, it's like, you don't necessarily have to lash out on people that they're, you know, giving it to you. You can't expect them to know everything that you're dealing with, or that you, when you receive this, it's going to affect you in the way that it did.
Yeah, I think both are true.
Yeah, me too.
So, one, I think there's a, like, even, like, scripturally, there's a responsibility to be wise and tactful in terms of the way I communicate something. Mm-hmm. And we need to do that as an act of obedience that's not tied to an outcome. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yo, I'm going to speak this in love, not just because I think you're going to receive it better, because you might not. Like, if you're dealing with some internal emotional stuff, there might be some hypersensitivity there. Mm-hmm. That means no matter how I say this, it's going to be an issue. But I'm going to say it this way because I feel like I got a responsibility to do that.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of person I'm going to be regardless of the outcome. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I think, Chester, to your question, to your point earlier about the types of criticism, I think we need to go back a step, because there's not only constructive and constructive criticism and criticism that's not constructive, that's like destructive. Mm-hmm. There's also, I think we need to talk about this. There is informed and uninformed criticism.
Okay.
Man.
I'm going to just get my phone out and pull up the notes app so I can take my notes. Go ahead, keep talking though.
I feel like
recorder on.
those two areas are the areas that I feel like are like super important.
Yeah.
Because some people like have opinions, but the opinions are like uninformed. So like, let's deal with like criticism and this like subject a purpose.
Yeah, just part right there. You got time.
Yeah. So like, let's talk. Let's talk about it, because a lot of times criticism is going to come when you pursue a version of yourself that is not consistent with what people expect or prefer.
Man.
And I don't know if we like really accept that, that people have preferences
for the
kind of person you should become. They got preferences for the kind of work that they feel like you should do.
Yep.
And very often, it's not that what you're doing is wrong. It's just what you're doing doesn't line up with their preference. So like, and my next book is on this. I'm dealing with this a little bit.
Your next book.
Yes. It's,
well, you just that's find the out marketer, new stuff.
Right? That's
the marketer. New stuff so, on the podcast.
But anyway.
You been to comment. I can't wait.
What they gonna say in the comment? I can't wait. Pastor, what is it?
Here we go.
Really? Pastor said he released it in the
Why you go to Soprano though, bro?
World tour.
That's exactly how they gonna be.
Y'all, that's Dakari. Dakari Middlebrooks.
Yes.
On Facebook and IG. Go drop all that.
ID is Dakari J.
But you know, Dakari J. Drop all that. You're saying, because we're going to have a conversation about this when this stops. Because we had a conversation about another project, and it's based on preference, how people see you.
Come on, Dakari.
I want you to go on and finish your point.
Oh, no.
Don't let him finish it.
We can put it all out here for the people.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, we're talking in code, but we can put it all out here for the people in a minute.
Okay, we're going. Straight talk. No
this
chaser.
Is my point, though. The point I'm making is a lot of people's criticism of other people mm-hmm. is because that person. Now, it's different when the person you're becoming is destructive to somebody else.
Yeah.
Or the thing that you're doing is unhelpful or unhealthy to someone else. Mm-hmm. That's completely different. Mm-hmm. But when a person is becoming a version of themselves that's just different than your preference or your expectation, then it's like, you know, you shouldn't be that or do that. And then it's like all that, the criticism comes. So I think it's important. This is a key, I think, to dealing with criticism. It's like discerning. Is this informed or uninformed? Mm-hmm. If this is uninformed criticism, then that goes into dismiss. Mm-hmm. That goes into dismiss category.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't know enough to have that opinion.
Right.
Ooh, you don't know
enough. Yeah, you don't know enough to have that opinion. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I've seen this, like, I don't know why we keep going back here. I keep going back here. But like, I see this a lot, like, with race conversations. Mm-hmm. Where it's like people have opinion, like, these strong opinions with little to no knowledge mm-hmm. about racial history.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, bro, like, you had a really strong opinion and you don't even know what Jim Crow is.
Right.
It's like, yeah. like, you're an expert on race. You don't even know what Jim Crow is. It's like, you got an opinion. It's just... it needs to be informed by some facts. You yeah. know what I mean? So I think distinguishing between that is important because you got to know, like, who's God calling you to be, what he's calling you to do, mm-hmm. and then how is that supposed to be expressed? Mm-hmm. And when it's expressed in a way that people don't get it, like, it's some people that just all that, like, they don't want me to do this. They just want me to speak.
They just want you in a box.
Well, this is what I think. I think everybody's got to understand that everybody's not going to want all of you.
Whew.
Got me, like, there are different parts of you, and people got the right to choose which part of you they want. So some people are like, yo, I just like Darius when he's doing sermons. I don't like the podcast.
I just like Darius on Sundays. I don't like Darius in between Sundays.
Yeah, I don't like that. It's like, oh, okay, wow. I like when you're preaching, but don't do that EDS stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I like when you're preaching, but, like, don't start a business or, like, don't coach people.
Ooh.
I think it's okay to say, wow, that's not something I want to receive for you. Mm-hmm. I think it's uninformed criticism when you say you shouldn't be doing
it. You shouldn't be mm-hmm. doing it. Yes.
Because mm-hmm. you don't have enough information.
Right.
To make that.
Right.
See, for you to make that statement, that means,
man, it's good.
You got to know what God told me to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's, and I think it's, I just feel like I talked for a long time.
But
that was so really good. Yeah.
Because you talked about two things that I was processing this. You talked about preference. And then another thing was expectations.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. is it fair that people can have expectations of you versus this idea of prefer you to be yeah. this way?
It is different.
It is different.
Mm-hmm. It is different. Mm-hmm. Like, people have expectations of spiritual leaders. They have yeah. expectations of politicians. They have expectations of, like, entertainers and
mm-hmm. yeah,
I don't have some of those expectations of people though. But yeah, I think right, people. This is what I think. I'm not trying to get, like, all
no
analytical here, but I think some of those expectations, I feel like, are because people unconsciously need you to be something.
Wow. Wow.
Like, they need you to be something so they can feel some kind of way about them. And I think...
I don't have any words.
When you are not here. That...
Yeah.
The reaction you get is, like, visceral and hostile. Yeah. Or whatever. It's like, yo, what is this? You're upset for me, with me, not being something I never told you I was.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And so I think those expectations are, like, more... it's like, you know, I need my stars to be perfect, and I need my the people that influence me to be to express themselves a certain kind of way. And I think now, and I'm not talking about stuff like you having ethical expectations of, like, spiritual leaders.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Yo, you should expect spiritual leaders to live with an ethical standard. I'm
Absolutely.
Not saying that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that. You should expect governmental leaders, public servants, to live with, like, an ethical standard. So I'm not talking about that stuff, but there are just times I feel like it's really, really people projecting some of their unconscious and undealt with needs and emotions on you.
But isn't that a lot of that also some type of trained or learned behavior? When you think about how I grew up, I was told this person should act like this. Like, for example, I was writing a paper once for divinity school, and just so happened I came home to Atlanta, and I was with my grandmother. I said, "Grandma, you're going to help me write this paper." "What, boy?" You know. Mm-hmm. And we sit there, and I said, "Why did you never question the pastor?" I was really dealing with, like, theology. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Because he was the closest thing to God." Mm. So anybody else in her mind, that's a pastor. Mm. Despite that pastor being a transition to heaven, any pastor that comes into her space is now seen as the closest thing to God.
Yeah.
So the expectations, right? So when I said I was called to ministry, her mind went, "My boy is the closest thing." And I'm like, "I'm the closest thing to the streets."
I was like,
"Your expectations are clear, right?"
Oh my God.
Yeah, but the preference though.
Be you the
know, that. I'm wrestling with that. So you get what I'm saying?
It's
I think a lot of it is also this learned behavior, what they saw or who's teaching you. It's so important to formation. Like what you're learning, what you're consuming is so important to you.
I think people have a right to have those expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like you don't have
But unless it's like ethical or moral expectations, I feel like what you don't do is you don't have a right to be visceral or volatile when somebody doesn't meet them, mm-hmm. if I didn't agree to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't agree to it.
Yes, right. You're upset with me for not doing something mm-hmm. I didn't agree to do or not being someone that I felt like
And nine times out of ten, people are going to have those expectations for you and they want you to agree to them.
You know, when we saw it a lot, when I launched EDS last year.
Yeah.
Like, we had to have hosts in the chat when I launched EDS to deal with
the criticism.
Oh, yeah. And it was like, people had just watched me for 3 days. And I think they did a masterclass for 3 days, like an hour, almost every night. And it's like, and then when I opened the door for everyday seminary, it's like, I'm a professor too.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I've been an adjunct at Princeton. And it's like, I'm a professor too. I'm just opening up this online learning platform for people who want more.
They were mad.
Yeah, like, it's like, yo, I'm not mandating that you get this. I didn't even make this a requirement for the 3-day masterclass.
Yeah.
It was, yes, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. I think part of my calling is to create content. And I want to give you something you're probably not going to get on Sunday, but that you're going to need on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah.
And when we opened that up and when there was an investment that people had to make, listen, I was like a charlatan. They called the whole masterclass a sales pitch and all those kinds of things. When you just could have been like, you know, I want the Bible teacher. I don't want the professor. Yeah.
And see, he can't say this, but I can say this.
Yeah, please say it.
If you mad, stay mad. Because it's only more to come. So like who's for you is going to be for you.
And who's not, and you're a great content creator.
Absolutely.
And that costs. You know?
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. I mean,
it's the time that's invested into it. The years.
Well, everything we had to do with EDS cost. But I kind of feel like people were upset about me not being something I never agreed to be.
Yeah.
I never agreed to be. And I was never called to be just the guy that just preached a message on Sunday. Because I don't believe that's enough to actually transform a person's life.
Right.
It was so the unrealistic expectation.
Just, yeah.
Unfair.
It's like I'm a change agent. So I'm going to do all kinds of stuff that help people change. And there are people that value that. And if you aren't a person that, if a person isn't a person that values that, I'm using me as an example.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to talk about anybody else.
Yeah,
no, it makes sense.
I'm using me as an example, but I want people who are hearing it, like in whatever your lane is, to get, you know, get this and to be you and to try to faithfully align with who you feel like God's called you to be. But I'm trying to pull the curtain back a little bit and just let people know, like when you make some of these moves, these are some of the things that come with it.
Yeah.
And think about, I mean, we had like thousands of students in EDS. And I think about how many people would have been robbed of that experience.
Yes.
If
you
we had cowered to the criticisms.
Oh, that's
people.
Good.
Yeah.
who aren't involved in me and God's conversations. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't know enough.
And you know what? It goes back to what I was saying about how people will try to box you in because they don't understand the calling that's on your life. So they see you as just this pastor, or they see you as just whatever your title is because they haven't experienced you in another light. But it's like, there's more to me than just what you see on Sundays.
Yeah.
There's more to me than what you just hear us on this podcast. It's like, if it doesn't fit you, if it doesn't sit well with you, then okay, it's not for you. You don't have to criticize it. Just say, it's not for me. But so many people get distracted and so many people are hindered from their purpose and living out their life calling because people have so much to say and criticize them for something that they think they shouldn't be doing. It's like, since when did God put you as the head of my life? Because I thought I had to answer him.
That happens with women too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? So it's not just like the criticism that comes like with certain professions. It's like gender role. We need to have a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. Like these, it's like, it's really social gender roles that influence Christian spaces too.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, well, how are you doing that? And you're a woman. It's like, yo, because I can.
Right.
I think we need to continue this conversation.
It's really good. I think for the listeners, for us, although we're on this with you, we get so much too.
Yeah.
Right? So you bless us. So I'm grateful for that. Shout out. You know.
Okay, Dakari, don't go too far.
No. But no, but I gotta tell you because
Continue, man.
He has his legs crossed. If you're listening via audio,
He blessed. Go ahead, continue.
He blessed us so well today.
Right? Yes.
Speak for yourself.
About criticism, Jess. He blessed us so well today that we have no other choice but to do this show.
Hey, Dakari, I bless you so well.
We have no other choice but to do this other show.
Yeah.
It's all about him.
You know,
it's all about him.
Hey, we have no other choice.
Yeah, I think we definitely have to continue this conversation.
Yeah.
There needs to be a part two. Yeah. We can't just end it here.
Yeah. Let's do it next week.
Yes.
Yeah, part two.
I'm here for it.
Continue this conversation on dealing with criticism. It's inevitable. People are going to do it. Doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means that they're human.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to learn how to manage it and manage it properly. And we hope this conversation help you. Hey, I'm excited. I want you to stay tuned. We're getting ready to wrap this up with favorite part of the show, the Ask Dr. Darius section. Yay. Right here on the Darius Daniels Podcast. Well, welcome to one of my favorite sections of the show, the Ask Dr. Darius section, where we answer questions that you send in. If you want to send in a question for this podcast, email us at podcast@dariusdaniels.com. Got some great questions today. I'm starting with Dakari.
Yes, PD. Question comes from Courtney. Courtney says, do you think it's important for a person to have a church home?
Yes, I do think it's important. I don't think it's always possible.
Hmm.
And when I say possible, I mean, there might be certain seasons where a person's discerning what's next. There might be, frankly, times where a person moves maybe to a remote part of the country or part of the world, and it's difficult to find one that they feel like, they're able to connect with. But generally speaking, whether it's, and people have different thoughts on this, but me, whether it's digital or physical, generally speaking, this is what I believe. All of the commandments in scripture regarding like two leaders about how to shepherd people well are commandments given with the assumption that you know what flock you're responsible for.
Yeah.
So like, I'm a spiritual leader, but I can't go into Walmart and say, hey, are you a Christian? You know, you need to do what I say. So I say that to say, on the flip side, all of what the Bible has to say to Christians about how to respond to leadership is based on the assumption that you know who that leader is.
I agree.
And without a church home, right? Without a church home, you don't know who is my designated voice, who's the spiritual watchman, watchwoman of... Some people just got mad with that, but watch one
yes.
of my soul. So, yeah, those are my thoughts.
That's Chassie. Good. Okay. My question comes from Mike. What is the one common myth about your profession or field that you want to debunk?
That, I kind of consider myself, some people don't like this. I kind of consider myself a spiritual entrepreneur. So it's like, when you, you say that to me, it's like, I don't know. But I think they're asking that like as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the common myth is that we're special.
They try to be special.
That special, like that there's some kind of like Jesus juice that we get.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
That everybody else doesn't get.
Really? I thought y'all got Jesus juice.
No, there's no special, there's no special Jesus juice that we get that no one, that any, I think this is why people are like so surprised sometimes when things happen and things of that particular nature. I feel like we have to cultivate and manage and tend to our relationship with God just like anyone else. And one of the things that the spiritual leaders in my life have helped me with, and I do this for those that I lead and mentor also, and that is making sure that you're always reminded that what you're supposed to do in ministry should be out of the overflow of your own relationship with God.
That's so good. Mm-hmm.
That the messages, that all of that is flowing out of the overflow
mm-hmm.
of your own relationship with God, that you study to grow, not just to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like sometimes I think that's a myth from the outside. And I feel like sometimes that can be something that people who are in my line of work, that can be something that we often forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Because when you got a gift, the gift will work. And Facts. You can just kind of get up and work the gift,
mm-hmm.
even if you're not working on that on your own relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the myth. It's they don't have any more Jesus juice. Some of them are actually, some of us are not closer to God than you are. And we got to work the same way to cultivate it. And it's something I'm not perfect at, but I work really, really hard at that piece.
That's what's up. It was good.
Amen. Praise God.
Now, Andrew has our final question. Andrew asks, when do you cut ties if you continue to pour into someone and you're seeing no fruit or growth? When do you cut ties?
All right. So here's the thing. This might be a little controversial. I don't know if lack of growth is always a reason to cut ties. Now, if you feel like maybe you've got this is going to sound so spiritual, a release to do that. You feel intuitively or spiritually, I've made all the contribution I can make here. And then it's okay to go.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, I do feel like when we say, yo, there's no fruit or no growth, I'm like, according to whose timetable?
Mm.
And sometimes things are growing, but they're growing under the surface. So it's like, is there no fruit or no growth? Or is there not the kind of fruit or growth that you'd like to see? And I think it's anybody that's in the people development, that does people development work of any kind. One of the personal attributes that you must develop in working with people is patience. Because I am telling you, people don't grow fast. And anybody who says they do, I don't believe you're really investing your life in people. There's a remnant of people, like a small percentage, that are going to grab it and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Others will have to hear it repeatedly, have to go through seasons and situations in life that make them ripe and ready to actually apply. But if you're in the people development business, everybody you're mentoring, they are not growing fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they don't have a hunger, if they're not willing to receive, then you're casting your pearls before swine.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, and it's time to pivot. I feel like if you are in a situation where you're like, I just feel like I can't contribute anymore to this person, I feel like it's time to make, you know, a pivot. But, you know, if they're trying and it's just not working for them, I feel like maybe you need to potentially reconsider.
Yeah.
And because I'm going to tell you straight up, when I think about abandoning people like that, I also think about how many times God's had to tell me some things.
Yeah.
Before I actually applied it. Now, I'm not God, so I'm not going to be that patient.
Right, right.
He God. I don't have that level of limitations.
You just got the Jesus juice.
I don't even have extra Jesus juice. So, those are things that I would say. Keeping great questions, though, guys.
Yeah, those
thank y'all for sending them in. Hey, please continue to do that podcast at DariusDaniels.com. And who knows? We might be answering your question next right here. We're really, really excited about that. Hey. Thank you, guys. Hey, thanks to my co-host for another amazing show. Thank you, guys, for tuning in and downloading. We need your help to spread the word about this show. And so as you like it and download it, that helps us do that. As you share it, if you're watching it on YouTube, it helps us do that also. And we look forward to doing this again next week. We'll see you next time right here, the Darius Daniels Podcast.
You're listening to the Darius Daniels Podcast.